This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. This is Rethink 2014, conversations and stories that challenge our habits and assumptions and ways of doing things. Today, rethinking America's place in the global economy. After years of isolationism, the United States rose in the 20th century to become the world's sole superpower. Today, economic growth is slow, unemployment and income inequality are rising, and political impasses have ground policy initiatives to a halt. America's status in global manufacturing, education, and innovation is slipping. Many economists project that China is poised to overtake the U.S. as the world's largest economy. It all sounds pretty bleak and has caused much public hand-wringing over losing ground. Economist Charles Kenny paints a much rosier picture. In his book, The Upside of Down, Why the Rise of the Rest is Good for the West, he argues that Americans should stop worrying and learn to love the decline. Charles Kenny is senior fellow at the Center for Global Development and former senior economist at the World Bank. Charles Kenny, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me back.
How accurate are these doomsday scenarios about America's decline?
Well, there's a germ of truth in them, in that I think pretty much everybody agrees that China is on the verge of overtaking the United States in terms of its gross domestic product, you know, absolute economic size. And last year, it overtook the United States in terms of the amount it traded in. And also, you know, if you look forward, a whole bunch of other countries, you know, India, Brazil, so on, are getting bigger faster than the United States is. And so over time, you know, the United States' share of just total world economic output will fall. So there's the true part of a story. The bit that I think is a bit mistaken is thinking that this is a complete disaster for the United States. The reason that the United States is losing global share, if you will, is a little bit to do with the fact that we've had a tough decade of economic growth. But it's mainly that these other countries are growing really fast. They're getting richer. They're getting more educated. They're getting more healthy. And most of them are getting more peaceful and more secure as well. And that's great news for the United States, because that means, you know, more places for people to visit, more places for people to trade with, more people for places to invest in. You know, just huge opportunities for the United States in this new, richer, wealthier, happier world.
So those opportunities are out there. But what if, say, China, India do overtake the U.S. as an economic power? What would be the immediate fallout domestically? Or maybe we shouldn't use the word fallout if we're following your model.
So what's happened over the last 10 years as China has grown, and one of the reasons, by the way, China has grown is because the United States, for example, is importing more from China. But what's happened over the last 10 years is you've seen trade increase both ways. So we're importing more stuff from China, but we're also selling a lot more stuff to China. And actually now, if you look at where U.S. Exports go worldwide. Way over half of them nowadays go to developing countries, to, you know, Africa, Asia, Latin America. So, you know, there's one opportunity. We can export more. But also the imports, although they do cause, you know, adjustment problems here at home, the imports are, we import stuff from China and India and elsewhere because they can build it cheaper, better in some cases than we can. That's good for U.S. consumers. The other things that will happen, a negative trade balance necessarily in economics means that there has to be a, you know, a positive investment balance, i.e. China and India and other places are investing more in the United States. They're actually creating jobs here in the United States. Lenovo, which bought out IBM's computing business, is now building computers in the United States again, something that IBM stopped doing ages ago. So we're seeing, you know, jobs from the investment. And we're seeing a whole sort of bunch of other impacts that are positive for the United States as well. I mean, you know, frankly, the rest of the world is more peaceful means it's a nicer place to visit. And so that means that, you know, more Americans, still far too few in my opinion, more Americans are traveling abroad to visit, to work, to live, to invest. And, you know, that's good for them and therefore good for the United States.
Well, we do have the example of a superpower in recent memory getting knocked off its global domination. Let's talk about Great Britain. How did that narrative play out, the sun falling on the empire?
So, as you may be able to tell, I was born and bred in Britain, although I'm a proud citizen of America, of the United States. But when I was growing up, the United Kingdom was still, you know, in some sense, is still recovering from the fact that it used to be the world superpower and wasn't anymore. And there were a couple of slightly grim decades in there, largely self-inflicted grim decades. It was the United Kingdom not waking up to the fact that its role in the world had changed. And so, you know, the 50s really were a tough time in Britain. But only just after you saw perhaps the sort of the very nadir of the UK's global influence, when Egypt nationalized the Suez Canal and Britain and France tried to invade the country to get it back. And basically the United States said, you do that, we will wreck your economy. And Britain and France stopped trying to invade Egypt to get it back. Only a couple of years after that, the British Prime Minister Harold Macmillan was saying, you've never had it so good to the British people. And he was absolutely right. If you looked at in terms of income or health or education, Britain had never been a better place to live. And today, you know, it's a really great place to live. The food's got better, quality of life on a bunch of dimensions has got better. You know, the number of people with an inside toilet has gone up. You sort of name your dimension of the quality of life, and it's hugely better than it was when Britain controlled, you know, a quarter of the world's land surface. So, you know, really, there is a huge disconnect between how much global power a country has and how nice it is to live in that country. And I think we need to be focusing more on, you know, how nice is it to live here, because that's what most people really care about.
Our Rethink 2014 series today is Rethinking America's Place as a Global Economic, Military, and Innovation Superpower. Economist Charles Kenny is with us. His new book is called The Upside of Down, Why the Rise of the Rest is Good for the West. Well, you're talking about things that are sort of central to American identity. You'd certainly have some pushback in Congress against changing or diminishing the military budget. But there's this idea that being number one is so much a part of American identity. Is it even possible to convince the American public that being the biggest is not the best?
You know, what makes America such a wonderful and fantastic country is not the size of its GDP, and indeed for most of American history it didn't have the largest GDP. What makes America great is the founding values. We want to create a place where you can have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think focusing on those things rather than GDP is returning to America's roots, if you will, and what really matters to the country. And being number one hasn't been all that great in terms of quality of life for America. And if you look at the period when the United States had the largest GDP, sort of from the 1930s and 40s onwards, it hasn't been a period of particularly high growth. The United States is slipping down the rankings globally in terms of things like life expectancy and child survival rates. It's slipping down the rankings when it comes to things like the quality of education. So, you know, being biggest hasn't actually paid off for the United States in terms of the things that matter to people's everyday lives. And I think, you know, fixating on it is just a mistake. And let's go back to fixating on the sort of core American values.
Beyond the economic power, geopolitical power, America is the country that is looked to for leading interventions, for international aids. I mean, the Syrian rebels are appealing to the United States, and nobody would be listening to the Secretary of State of, let's say, Lithuania pushing for Middle East peace, right? I mean, that kind of influence has an apparatus that comes with it and a way of thinking. What happens to that?
You know, I would not want the United States to disengage when it comes to global peacekeeping. I mean, I would, you know, point out that actually if you look at the percentage of the UN peacekeeping forces that come from the United States, the U.S. percentage to that global total of peacekeeping forces is 0.03%. Mm. America, you know, actually isn't playing the dominant role in a lot of these peacekeeping efforts. It tends to want to go it alone, and that's one of the things that I think could change to benefit both the United States and the rest of the world. But the U.S., you know, undoubtedly, overwhelmingly has much more capacity in things like, you know, airlifting troops and so on, and that's a vital role which can be of huge benefit both to America and the world. And I wouldn't want to see America giving up on that instantaneously. But I think there's a difference between saying there is still this vital role for American leadership in the world and saying that, you know, this ought to be our only or our primary focus. When we think about what we're doing in the rest of the world, our primary focus being thinking thinking about national security in the old sense of the term, you know, military dominance.
I guess I want to go back to that idea of the sort of emotional power of being number one. What are the advantages to humility? I mean, do you foresee a future? Can you sort of play that out for us, a future where we don't see global powers outside of our borders as the others, the threats?
Yeah, I mean, they are just more and more necessary partners, right? So, I said that the United States is probably one of the least globally integrated when it comes to trade. But still, you know, with the United States, more and more jobs, hundreds of thousands, millions of jobs in the United States come from exporting industries. More and more of our, you know, retirement savings are invested overseas. If you look at global stock markets, so more and more integrated. So, you know, if there is a financial crisis in Europe, it has a dramatic effect on the United States. We are, you know, necessarily tied up with the rest of the world in so many different ways. We have to see the rest of the world as partners. To take another example, climate change. We can't deal with climate change alone in the United States, partially because the biggest global emitter of carbon dioxide nowadays is China, and number three is India. And unless the United States and China and India work together on this issue, you know, Atlanta is going to be toast. So we have to work together. In a way, we don't have a choice, you know, and that takes an element of humility. But it also, you know, again, is a huge opportunity because we're not in a zero-sum world. It's not that India and China getting, you know, richer or healthier makes us worse off. Quite the opposite. India and China being more secure, I hope in China seeing, you know, democratic reforms and so on, actually is great news for the United States and creates huge opportunities. And I'd say that, you know, there is an element of humility there, but there's also a huge amount for the United States to be proud of. This is a country that the rest of the world, in many, many ways, emulates. People in the rest of the world, if you survey them, they're not necessarily huge fans of American foreign policy, but by golly, they watch a lot of, you know, U.S. TV and films, and, you know, they admire American liberty and so on and so forth. So there's a lot for America to be proud of and a lot that America should be proud of. I just don't think that, you know, being the largest economy in terms of GDP is one of those things that really matters.
Charles Kenny, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
Charles Kenny, Senior Fellow at the Center for Global Development and former Senior Economist at the World Bank. His latest book is called The Upside of Down, Why the Rise of the Rest is Good for the West. You'll find a link to more on the book at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.